football time.
Here we go, D!
Time to get ready for the weekend.
E-man!
This is Jake and TD with Jake Lyman and ESPN Titans NFL Nation reporter Teron Davenport.
Presented by Soul Restaurant Nashville.
Your sports live here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Jake and T, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jake Lyman, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, Teron Davenport alongside you. Here from 6 to 7 on your Friday night, getting you set for another football weekend. TD, how was your week? I know you had a nice trip out there to L.A. And now back here for a home game this weekend against the Vikings.
Yeah, the week was good. You know, everything is kind of in the barn, the hay's in the barn, so to speak, with this Friday being here, the work is done. It's just now let's see what happens on Sunday. So that's pretty much the way it is. Tomorrow I have a story posting on Will Levis and just how he played against the Chargers and what to look at against the Vikings. So excited about that to come out tomorrow morning.
Should be a fun one on Sunday as the Vikings come to town. We're going to talk about that game a little bit later on in the show. But first we'll look back at last Sunday's game out there in Los Angeles. Titans falling to the Chargers, now are 2-7 on the season as they head into Sunday's matchup with the Vikings. TD, I mentioned right before we started recording that I don't feel like the Titans played terribly on Sunday. Obviously the defense couldn't get off the field as easily as you may have liked to. The offense had some times where they went a little stagnant. Yeah. You had a good first drive, as we've seen pretty often from the Titans. Then you had a good start to the third quarter, and then obviously the garbage time touchdown late in the game. But too many times where the offense just kept stalling out, and obviously the sacks had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, the sacks, definitely penalties. Those are all things that really made it tough. And I think when you look at just the way this team was trying to drive, they couldn't do it in the second half. That was the big problem. First half, they put together some drives, and obviously getting into the red zone and scoring is the objective. They were not able to do that outside of, I think it was Ridley's touchdown late in the game.
Right.
But this drive series, it just wasn't good, and it's something they have to get together. I mean, when you look at this, so you got first drive of the game, 7 plays, 72 yards. It was 41 of that, the strike to Calvin Ridley, and you know what? That was a very good throw by Will Levis. I really like what he did as far as manipulating the defense, moving, like holding that safety over there, so Ridley had a completely open lane, so that was good. Then you had the 3-and-out, and then after that, a missed field goal, and that was what we were talking about with the two Leroy Watson penalties, who, as we now know, is not going to be playing this weekend. So, you know, it just – you can't have games where you're not able to drive the football consistently. And, I mean, you have another drive right in the third quarter, 11 plays, 62 yards, 7 minutes. You get to keep the defense off the field. You kick the field goal. It's 13-10. Kickoff team allows them to return 56 yards, and it's plus 43. And the Chargers proceeded to score a touchdown. I was 20-6. You can't have those things happen when this team is the way that they are. There's no margin for error, none, and there was plenty of error in this game.
And talking about the special teams there, complementary football is what the Titans need. They can't have only one phase of their team working at a time. They need everything to kind of work together, and it's tough when you go down there, long drive, almost half of the third quarter, you do get points, you wish you could have gotten a touchdown, but then immediately your defense has its back up against the wall again.
Yeah.
And the Titans have just fallen short in complementary football. Special teams, obviously, a large culprit there, but the offense and the defense also haven't helped each other out enough this year as well.
See, it used to be no matter where you put the defense on the field, they were going to put the fire out. And sometimes putting the fire out is 3 points instead of 7. This defense in the red zone is not good.
No.
They're not good. I think it's like 60-something percent. They're giving up touchdowns in the red zone, and Chargers were 3 out of 5. That's not good. And when you have these things happening, that's a part of the uncomplimentary football, right? Because it's complimentary if, okay, special teams, you give up a long return. Offense, you turn it over. Defense comes out and they squash it. Now it balances out. But when you have it just being layered, it's a bigger issue.
You mentioned that first drive of the game where the Titans go 7 plays, 72 yards, score a touchdown. It's becoming a trend where the Titans' first drive of the game seems to always end in, if not points, a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it seems like the offense just can't figure it out after they get past that scripted maybe first 15 plays. What do you think the cause of that is? Is that maybe Brian Callahan still trying to get into the rhythm of calling plays live and getting off of his script? Or maybe is that just the offense, once they get past those plays they're prepared for, not being able to adapt and make the plays necessary to move the ball?
I honestly think it's a combination of a lot of things. And what you have to remember is you never know when they get off of the script. Right. So,
yeah, we don't know how many plays they're scripting.
You don't know. Like, you look, okay, it's 2nd and 7. Levis gets sacked. Now it's 3rd and 8. Those 3rd and long situations, Brian Callahan spoke extensively today about how he wants to avoid those. Right. So I wonder if he had to go off script for that. Right. Incomplete pass to Calvin Ridley in that situation. And they had to punt. You know, you have that. You're looking at another one. They went 3 and out. It's their 2nd-to-last drive outside of the one play one with time ticking off. But you look at that one, right, 1st and 10, 3rd and 12. So, again, what continues to surface is a sack, penalty, something is happening on 1st and 2nd down to put them in 3rd and long. And this team just, that offense, the offensive line, they're not equipped to overcome 3rd and longs. It's just, that's the way it is.
Right. The Titans haven't shown that they can be a drop-back passing team. And when you get in 3rd and longs, it does seem like the Titans are kind of backed into a corner of, you kind of have to run a screen or a draw just to try and maybe make it an easier punt. Or if you're close to field goal range, pick up a few extra yards. They just haven't been able to get out of that those tough situations, and especially with the way the offensive line has played.
Yeah.
The play that has gotten all the headlines from the game is the strip fumble from Jeffrey Simmons that ended up being returned for a touchdown, and then after review was overturned and called incomplete. I was on with D-Mace back on Tuesday, and I got on my soapbox, and I talked about this a little bit, so I won't go too far. But, TD, I don't understand how there is no consistency in how this call is reviewed, because everybody will remember the Josh Dobbs play from Week 18 2 years ago where they call it a fumble on the play field. They let it play out, return for a touchdown, and then they don't even go to the review. They just kind of held up the extra point for a second, and then, all right, play on. Titans lose that game, don't go to the playoffs.
Hey, that's what I'm about to say, and this is a game with playoff ramifications. Very clear and obvious playoff ramifications.
Right, and this is with under 2 minutes to go, so it's not like in that situation Mike Vrabel couldn't have challenged. They had to call it from upstairs. They didn't. They didn't stop play at all. But then against the Chargers, the pool report comes out, and they said they were going frame by frame trying to find out whether his arm was moving forward. I feel like there needs to be consistency. If you're going to go frame by frame and just look for one frame where you see control of the football and the arm is moving forward, and that's all it takes to call it incomplete, then why is that not being done on every play?
Right. And the thing is, if the ball is knocked out before his arm is moving forward, and his arm moving forward still makes the ball go forward.
Right.
The ball's knocked out beforehand. But above all else, two things. You tell me you have this enhanced view. Why aren't you showing that to everybody? Another thing is, I always thought you were reviewing to confirm.
Right.
Not to overturn. They, it seems like, were going through trying to find, okay, let's see how we could overturn this, as opposed to, okay, let's see how we could confirm it.
There was not clear and obvious evidence, which is what they're supposed to be looking for.
It's supposed to be inconclusive.
And obviously you can't review this, but it was funny to watch that review over and over and just see Jeffrey Simmons, before he made the play, with an arm around his neck, just being bear-hugged from behind and still making the play. But it's just funny that, you know, he fights through that, makes the play, and because they went frame by frame and found one look that they said he had control, they overturn it and take 7 points off the board. I don't know if that changes the outcome of the game. I don't know if the Titans end up winning that game because the Chargers outplayed Tennessee in the second half.
It doesn't change.
But it's a big difference going into the half down six versus up one.
Yeah, it doesn't single-handedly change it, but it does make a difference in it. And it's honestly disgusting that this was the case, and it should have been a touchdown. And I tell you, that building was already relatively quiet, but it was really quiet after that play. And even in the press box, we all were kind of looking at each other like, did that really just happen? And so when you have all these things just eliminated, of course, it's going to have somewhat of an impact.
I have just kind of resigned, and I say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I have resigned to the fact that on that play, whatever the ruling is, if the Titans are involved, it's going to go against the Titans. Because we've seen it three times now in the last two calendar years. Jaguars game in Week 18. Last year, Week 1, Derek Carr had a fumble that should have been returned for a touchdown. They first off blew the play dead, and then they said it was incomplete after review. And then, of course, this past week against the Chargers. Titans fans, I know, are frustrated about it. I've seen the cut-ups of all three of those plays together. I don't see a difference, and if there is, it's minimal. But for some reason, Dobbs was a fumble. The other two weren't. Titans, again, fall to 2-7 after falling to the Chargers at SoFi Stadium this past weekend. Coming home to take on the Minnesota Vikings this week, hoping to avoid losing back-to-back games. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Will Levis returned to the starting quarterback position after missing three straight games last week. How did he look? No turnovers for Will Levis, but took 7 sacks. We'll talk about what that means moving forward as he prepares for his second straight start on Sunday. Jake and TD here from 6 to 7, brought to you by Soul Restaurants Nashville. You're listening to 102.5 and 106.3, The Game.
Complex, that scheme that Flores uses, and you have Levis, who has a lot going on in his mind, processing, etc. How do you go about like getting him ready, and what do you tell him, you know, to expect?
Well, you have to play our rules too. You know, it's a little bit more about how we execute and what we do, as opposed to trying to get too caught up in everything that they do. And you have to have a patience involved in it. It's a difficult scheme to get ready for, so he's going to have to make sure he's spending the time, and we're making sure we're putting him in position to have the answers when he needs them, and that's our job to get him to that point. Try to make it as simple and easy for him as possible, because he's going to have to diagnose a lot of things on the field that are challenging. So all those things are going to be really big factors in his ability to have success against his defense, and I think we'll put together a good plan for him.
That was head coach Brian Callahan earlier this week talking about what Will Levis will see from Brian Flores in this tough Vikings defense coming up on Sunday. Brian Flores, he is known for making it tough on young quarterbacks, showing them different looks, showing them a lot of blitzes, and I'm sure that coming off a 7-sack game, he's not going to show any mercy to Will Levis on Sunday. Jake and TD brought to you by Soul Nashville here on 102.5 and 106.3. The Game, Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport. TD, before we get too far into the Vikings defense on Sunday, Will Levis returns to the field for the first time in nearly a month back on Sunday against the Chargers. Doesn't throw an interception. 2 touchdowns, both to Calvin Ridley. I think there was some good that you could take for sure from his return to the field. I know that a lot of people have harped on him holding the ball too long, which on some of those sacks, you could see it. He was, you know, kind of hesitant. You could see maybe a little bit of a slight hesitation and maybe a pump fake at times of, hey, I kind of want to make this throw, but I don't want to throw an interception, and ends up taking the sack. But overall, I thought it was a solid game from Will Levis in his first game back from injury.
Yeah, I mean, looking at these numbers here, I mean, the 78% completion is really good. You look at the touchdown that he had. Both touchdowns actually were really good plays.
Yeah.
And it was two different throws, but he managed to get him there. I think you look at the ability to protect himself for the most part. There was one where he was scrambling to the right early, spun back inside. First off, just throw it to Chig and let Chig, you know, catch it. And If he gets yards, great, but at least you're not getting hit.
He's going to take the hit, yeah.
So you have that. But other than that, I think he slid pretty, you know, he was good with that. For the most part, made the throws. There was one on a sail route where he should have thrown it to Wiley on the crosser. But I think overall he played solid football. And the big thing is, hey, he didn't turn the football over. That's major because this is a guy that was right up there with everyone else when it came to leading the league in turnovers before he got hurt. And to get away from that, I think, is a big thing. Now you just have to build upon it.
We talked about early in the season when, you know, he kept having these boneheaded mistakes and pick sixes and bad fumbles. Let's just get one clean game under his belt.
Right.
And
here
he finally did it. Again, I don't think he did anything super special in this game. And
no.
Obviously, you were never really in position to go win that game towards the end, which is what you want from your quarterback, is to keep you close enough that you can go win it at the end. But he also didn't hurt the team, I don't think. The right tackle situation obviously isn't going to be advantageous for Will Levis, as Leroy Watson and John Ajukwu, neither of them really had all that great of days on Sunday. And there were even Dylan Radins got beat pretty bad one time. That was probably
that was
the big hit that Will Levis took in the pocket. So he wasn't really given all that many opportunities from the offensive line on those seven sacks. Although there were a few that I think he probably could have gotten the ball out a little quicker.
Obviously, a few, and the one we mentioned, and it's not even a matter of quicker or just gotten it out. You know,
gotten
but
it
you're
out,
right.
Period, yeah.
There are times where he could have gotten the ball out quicker too, and it's. When you see that pocket collapsing around him, mainly behind him, you look at the drills that these quarterbacks do. They always do the one where they carry the ball like that, and then they take a step and they rock it as they're, and that's to simulate climbing the pocket when that pressure is coming behind you. That's why it's so important to have a good guard, center, guard trio, because that allows your quarterback to be able to step forward in the pocket and sometimes find the escape lane. And that escape lane was there where, or even he could have bought more time, dump it to Tajay Spears or your checkdowns. And again, you're allowing them to take the hit. In some cases, they can make the big play. As Levis said, when I asked him about that, he said, yeah, I got to take that underneath sometimes because, you know, they could catch it and make a play, maybe knife through and get the big yards that are needed. And he's very right. So the thought process is there. You just got to get that process to transfer to action, and especially action in the heat of the moment, because it's a lot different when you're out there and these guys are chasing after you and all of that.
And it's not going to get much easier this week.
No.
We just heard Brian Callahan talking about how they're trying to give Will Levis the answers beforehand a little bit, so he's not overthinking while he's in the moment playing on the field. Because you've seen it. I always go back to one clip I saw. I think Mina Kimes might have tweeted it earlier this year, of Brian Flores had like 9 defenders along the line of scrimmage and dropped into Tampa 2 from there.
Yeah.
Like, Will Levis is going to see everything this week, and he's going to have to diagnose quickly or else he's going to be on his back a lot, just like he was last week.
That was one of the things that we went over on Whiteboard Wednesday, right? The way he uses Harrison Smith. And I hate to make the comparison, and I'm not really making the comparison as far as ability. I'm making it as from usage. That's what the Steelers used to do with Troy Polamalu.
Yeah.
He would play, line up at the line of scrimmage, and they drop back into that cover too. And that's what Flores does. But the other thing that Flores does and why it's so confusing is sometimes he'll have that guy take a step back and then come after the quarterback. And then other times, just to layer it even more, he'll have that guy take a step forward, and he'll have another pressure coming from that side. And you're like, quarterback, okay, boom, I'm just going to replace where he came from, throw this slant right over here. And instead of attacking the quarterback, Harrison Smith will show it and then drop right back in that passing lane. Normally, that's something that they do with a defensive lineman.
Right.
You're doing it with a DB. You got a much more agile guy, much more capable of picking it off, and boom, there's a turnover. So it's like there's so many things that they do to just mess you up, and there's no remorse. Like, it's like we are just going to be relentless and attack you. And, oh, by the way, Ivan Pace is another one that they blitz. Jonathan Grenard is having an outstanding game. Like, this team is a very tough defense to deal with.
The Vikings heading into the year, I don't think there were that many high expectations for them. I think a lot of people expected J.J. McCarthy was going to start at least half of the season.
Yeah. And
Sam Darnold has shown, maybe not that he was the MVP candidate that people were talking about through the first month of the season, right, but that he is a very capable starting quarterback for this team, and the Vikings have put themselves firmly in the NFC playoff picture. Will Levis going to have a tough go of it on Sunday if he wants to build off of last week's game against the Chargers? You mentioned dropping the defensive end out into coverage and how the Vikings will do that with Harrison Smith. We've already seen Will Levis make that mistake. The Dolphins game threw it right between the numbers I'm blanking on the defensive end's name for the Dolphins.
I just blanked. The Oklahoma State, Emmanuel Ogba.
Yes, Emmanuel Ogba. Yeah. And you could read his lips on the sideline. I didn't even see him. He's going to have to see those guys if he wants to avoid some major turnovers on Sunday.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, because sometimes things are happening so fast. And understandably, like, as the quarterback, you don't always see that because you're so focused on other things, and the guy just flashes in there. So what he said isn't bogus.
No.
You just got to see him. And he didn't. And that's to the point of what we're talking about with Harrison Smith. You got to, okay, he takes that step. You got to know, okay, he's coming or he's dropping. Sometimes the timing of it all, because it could be catch and throw. And by the time you catch and throw it, he's dropping back, and boom, it's an interception or pass the deflection. So those are all things that he's going to have to be wary of. It's going to be a tough assignment. I like what Brian Callahan said, though, because he talked about not only making sure the keys and answers are available to Will Levis early, he also added that they want to show Flores that they have the answers to the test early. Maybe if they sting him a couple times out of that, that zero blitz that they have, or just, whenever they send, whatever, that might get him out of it. And then he'll, okay, let me recalibrate and try something else. And now you're getting away from kind of the game plan momentarily that he has coming in.
Last thing on Will Levis here before we move on. Calvin Ridley had another solid game on Sunday, and I think that's big for Will Levis, is to have that guy be one of your favorite targets out there.
Yeah.
We saw through the first month of the season, they had trouble connecting. They had the one big play against the Jets, but in the Packers game, it was pretty much all DeAndre Hopkins. He didn't do much in the Dolphins game before Will Levis got hurt. It was nice to see those guys look to be on the same page for the most part on Sunday.
Really good to see them be on the same page. And I tell you, that throw, and really did an awesome job on that route, the 41-yard touchdown, because first off, I'm still confused why the corner is cover two, right? Get the jam on him. It slow him down. You got to help your safety. And he didn't. And then he was able, and actually in that case, if I remember correctly, it was inverted and it was the DB that dropped back. I have to go back and look at it again, but I'm pretty sure that's what happened. And he just managed to get by that DB. And once, you're running that post on a cover two, right, and you get inside that deep half defender, you're home free.
Right.
As long as the quarterback, and I had it happen to me one time, the quarterback led me to the other hash and I got body rocked. And I ended up fumbling too. I got blasted so bad. But you got to lead him upfield. And I think that's exactly what Levis did. So that's a good example of the symmetry. And then, the drop shot over the shoulder, beautiful slot fade. You see there's no safety there. You just drop it in the bucket and he goes and gets it. Those are good signs.
Hope to see that chemistry build in the second game back for Will Levis under center this week against the Vikings. Levis needs to continue to show growth if he wants to continue to get consideration to be the guy here moving forward for the Titans. We'll take a quick break. More coming here on the Vikings and Titans on Sunday. Titans back at home at Nissan Stadium. Noon kick against Minnesota. Jake and TD here on your Friday evening, presented by Soul Nashville on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Jake and TD, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Talking Titans here on your Friday evening. Getting set for Titans and Vikings on Sunday over at Nissan Stadium. With you till 7 p.m., presented by Soul Nashville. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport. TD, Injuries this week, the only two players who have been ruled out are Leroy Watson and Lajarius Sneed. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Leroy Watson. That right tackle rotation continues to spin. It's like a carousel out there between Leroy Watson, John Ajukwu. Now we're back to NPF.
Maybe Isaiah Prince.
Isaiah Prince apparently is the swing tackle this week. You know, Jared tells the right tackle story. I think everybody kind of knew right tackle was going to be a question mark this year. I don't know if anybody thought it was going to be as much of a revolving door as it's been so far.
No, I wouldn't say I thought it would be a revolving door. But, I mean, look, this whole thing, this misconception that Jared is the only person.
The only one.
Yeah, he whined and screamed the loudest. But that's always the case. That doesn't mean that, you know, I didn't pound the table and say, hey, you guys got to draft Roger Rosengarten. That doesn't mean that I didn't say Morgan Moses was someone you trade for. That doesn't mean that you weren't saying, hey, this right tackle position, like, I get it, it's Bill Callahan, but they got to find some talent there. Like, the world knew that right tackle was an issue. For whatever reason, they felt, hey, there's talent here at NPF. Compete that with Leroy Watson and John Ajukwu. The best man wins, and he's not in this case. They got to do better. Tyree Phillips, former Giants, and I keep saying it over and over and over again, he's out there. He's back. He's healthy again. He started 9 games last year.
Can't get worse, can it?
Can't get worse. Can't get worse. Sign him, get him up to par. You still got 8 games left. You know what I mean? He probably wouldn't play this upcoming one against the Texans, but okay, that's fine. Roll him out against the Commanders.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think you have to be looking at any and all options at the right tackle spot. And, I mean, what would Tyree Phillips cost you to sign for the rest of the year? Not much. It would be a flyer. You can see what you got, and, you know, if he does well, maybe he's a guy you consider to bring back into battle for a spot next year. But right now, we've seen NPF. It has not gone well. The game against, was it the Packers game, where he just got absolutely destroyed and ended up being a strip sack, and it just hasn't been good.
Yeah.
And the Titans already are down Lloyd Cushenberry on the offensive line now. I think Daniel Brunskill has held up fine in his replacement, but you got to find somebody who's at least serviceable, I guess would be the word, at right tackle. I don't know how if Phillips would be that, but again, could he be worse than what you have right now? I don't think so.
Hey, look, it's hard to tell how serviceable he'll be initially, but I believe that he's someone that can work into that position and possibly solidify it for you, but at least get it under wraps, under control this year. The veteran player, he started at guard too, you know, so he gives you that versatility as well. So I don't know, we'll see, but I tell you, X account AGGRO512, Girth Brooks. NPF is going to highly recommend the Vikings defense at his fantasy football job. I saw that. I had to repost it. You know, I don't usually post cheap shots like that, but that is the tweet of the day, man. That's retweetable in my eyes, and it's hilarious.
It's tough with NPF when he obviously hasn't played well. If he was playing as a starting caliber right tackle, I don't think there would be any jokes about that. But as a guy who had a gambling suspension and is not playing well on the field, having a job in fantasy football is not good for his PR right now.
Completely misreading the room. Completely. Now, and I get these things are scheduled ahead of time. I wouldn't have done it, but hey, who am I to tell another man not to make an extra dollar or two?
Well, we will see how he does on Sunday as he returns to the lineup. It hasn't been good so far this year, but NPF getting another opportunity on the right side of the line. Lajarius Sneed also out once again this week. This quad injury has lingered, and it went from kind of, maybe a week or two to now we're looking at a month that he's missed. What's your take on the Lajarius Sneed situation and when he could possibly be back in the lineup?
Well, let me start with this. let's just stop with this whole he's faking, he doesn't want to be here nonsense. Because this is all just uneducated and just out of left field. I could tell you for sure he wants to be here. Spoke to him yesterday. He spoke on Wednesday also. And, you know, I talked to him a little bit yesterday just about compartment syndrome, which is an injury, lo and behold, that you could get from taking a helmet where? To your thigh. So I'm not saying that he has that, but he wasn't aware of that. So, I shared the information with him, shared the Ryan Johansson injury, you know, and these are things that sometimes on the surface an injury doesn't appear to be bad, but it is. And I think that's what's happening here. And the other thing that you got to make sure that you understand, and I unearthed this in talking to him, that happened earlier in the game. It was before he got the interference call where Alec Pierce went deep. If you go back and watch that, you'll see him down on the ground for a second afterward. That's another evidence that, yeah, it happened and he was kind of dealing with it. Adrenaline during a game can carry you through with an injury. Just because he played, because get these people out here, well, he played 99% of the snap. Yeah, adrenaline can help you with that. A lot of players have had an injury, and then after the game, like, oh, shoot, I didn't realize that this, and this was the condition.
No, it happens all the time. I don't know if you remember James Mitchell. He played at Virginia Tech, tight end. He was with the Lions for a little bit. He was like a fourth or fifth round pick.
Okay.
But when he was at Virginia Tech, I remember he tore his ACL in a game, played the rest of the game, and then woke up the next morning and his knee had swollen up so much. He went in, got it checked out, it was torn. So you might not know immediately how much you're injured. Obviously, it wasn't a tear for Legarius Sneed or anything like that, but you can play through it, and then the next morning when you're laid down for 8 hours and your leg swells up, something went wrong. I do think Titans fans in general need to take off the tinfoil hats with some of this injury stuff. There were people saying that Will Levis wasn't actually injured and it was a soft benching from Brian Callahan. Like,
it's just stupid. Stupidness.
There are rules with the injury report in the NFL. Like, they have to be accurate with that stuff. They can't just lie and say that somebody's hurt when they're not. Mm-hmm. And players wouldn't do that as well. So,
yeah. And this whole thing, if he's throwing it in, okay, well, why would Jarvis Brownlee say, like, that's big bro, and that's someone that I look up to. He helps me every day with tips and his notes and yada, yada, yada. Why would Denard Wilson get up there and, look, I know we don't know these people intimately, but you have seen Denard Wilson speak multiple times, enough to know that that is an authentic man. Why would he get up there and not say, oh, he's 100% bought into this organization? If he didn't believe he was. So let's just stop. Just kill it.
Yeah,
stop.
Nobody's going up there and saying that unless it's true. If it wasn't true and they believed he wasn't bought in, they would have said something like, oh, he's working his way back, something like that, just deflected, instead of an all-out, you know, endorsement of Legarius Sneed. But he has missed a good amount of time. Has there been any talk of putting him on IR or, you know, how much longer it's going to be? Because, again, he hasn't been out of practice. Brian Callahan, it seems like every week, is saying he's week to week.
That's what they're sticking to, the week to week. Now, Sneed himself said he's closer to close.
Okay.
He did, when we talked to him, he said he hasn't really done anything out on the field to recover or anything like that. His physical action, so to speak, has been limited. So, who knows? I understand the frustration. I would be frustrated, too, if I was a fan. But, look, man, injuries happen. They happen. The man is hurt. He's not dogging it. He's hurt, period.
I know, and it's funny, and it's not just Jared. Like, there are other people out there, but Jared's the one who says it. But the people who take kind of a victory lap of, oh, we said he was injured. We knew he was injured when they traded for him. It's like, it's a different injury. It's not his knees. It's the quad. And you hope that Legarius Sneed is able to come back this year, but guess what? It's not like he's a rental player. You got him on a 4-year deal. He's going to be back next year, and when he has played and when he's been healthy, he has been as advertised. The Colts game, he took that hit early on. Obviously, wasn't 100%. Alec Pierce is one of the best deep threats in the league. Mm-hmm. Not trying to make excuses for L'Jarius Sneed, but you can understand why he had a couple of bad plays in that game.
Yeah, and but, then, I mean, he had the hamstring the week before against the Dolphins, and man, Tyreek Hill had him cooked a couple times. True. Like, I'm not going to fake
Snoop, if Snoop Huntley.
Yeah, he had him cooked. But, hey, I mean, fortunately for him, he got out of it without him catching the ball, you know?
That box scores don't have pictures in them. All it shows is that he did not give up a catch on that play. Mm-hmm. But in the games he has been healthy, I think L'Jarius Sneed has shown that he is worth what the Titans have paid him, and hopefully he can continue to get healthy and get back to that form coming up soon. We will take a quick break here, come back with our final segment here on this Friday evening, preview a little bit more of this Vikings game. Vikings with Justin Jefferson coming to town. No L'Jarius Sneed. What's the plan to try and contain him on Sunday? That's up next. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Jake and TD, presented by Soul Nashville here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Woo! Bring them out, bring them out. 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 Bring them out. Jake and TD, final segment on this Friday evening, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Jake Lyman, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, Teron Davenport alongside you, getting ready for this Titans and Vikings game on Sunday, and a great football weekend ahead. Lots of big games across college football. I know Tennessee and Georgia are going to get a lot of headlines around the state coming up tomorrow, and also some great games across the NFL. We'll get to some of those coming up here in the final minutes of the show. But first, TD, I teased heading into the break, Justin Jefferson coming to town. Mm. I think most people would say he's the best wide receiver in the league. I would have that opinion. And the Titans are going to be missing, at least from the beginning of the season, their top two cornerbacks heading into this game. How do you see the Titans trying to attack Justin Jefferson? I don't know if attack's the right word, because you probably are just trying to limit his impact on the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I think Ja'Marr Chase has a little saying in that too, but look, they're going to have to face him too, so that's
true.
Bad
that's
news for this Titans team. When you talk about Jefferson, though, I'm not traveling or doing anything like that with him. I probably wouldn't even do that with Sneed, honestly, but Jarvis Brownlee Jr., he said that he's looking forward to this game because he, the Miami connection, the South Florida connection, he knows the Cook brothers very well, Dalvin and James Cook. And Dalvin Cook at the time was teammates with Jefferson, and he got Jefferson on the phone, and Jefferson told him, like, I'm gonna do the thing to you, you know, when you get, I'm gonna work you when you get to the league. And he was hype about that. So now it's the opportunity to back that up. He said that he's gonna put hands, and he's a physical corner. That's he loves, and this is the guy. I remember my first interaction with him was, you know what? If you and I practice together, we'll fight every day. And he just started cracking up because he knew exactly what I was saying, because he is that pest as a corner. He's always got his hands on you. Receivers hate that, especially guys in the league. Justin Jefferson especially, I know he doesn't like that. So that's going to be his approach when he's covering him. Denard Wilson said at times they're going to double. But at the same time, you know, you double him, you got Jordan Addison, who's a route craftsman himself, and you got T.J. Hockenson. Now you got, you know, Aaron Jones coming out of the backfield. There's a lot together for Sam Darnold to choose from, but a leopard doesn't change their spots. And Sam Darnold is coming down to earth. And, in fact, if you look on ESPN.com, Kevin Seifert, who was our guest on Talking with TD, he has a story on Sam Darnold and just, you know, how the turnovers have really accrued. So make sure you check that out.
Yeah, he had 3 interceptions against the Jaguars a couple weeks ago.
6 in the last 2. He's leading the league in turnovers.
Yeah, it hasn't looked good for Sam Darnold lately after a red-hot start to the season. I do think getting T.J. Hockenson back from injury has been huge for them. Mm-hmm. He has been the go-to guy on third down since he's returned from injury, and it really does put a lot more pressure on this Titans defense, because let's say you do double Justin Jefferson, you're putting single coverage on Hockenson and Addison on third down, which it usually doesn't end well.
And with these linebackers, I mean, look, you had to play zone. You had to play zone.
Should be a fun week across the NFL. We already saw last night Commanders and Eagles battle atop the NFC East. Eagles getting the best of Washington there, but I think this might be the best set of games we've had, at least over the last month, in terms of how many great matchups there are. Obviously, the number one game this week, Chiefs-Bills in Buffalo, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. Somehow, the Chiefs escaped with a win back on Sunday against the Broncos, but now having to go face a Bills team that's 8-2 on the year, and obviously, when those two guys face off, we always seem to get a classic of a football game.
Yeah, I mean, these are two of the three best quarterbacks, two of the four best quarterbacks in football, because Lamar absolutely has to be in there, Joe Burrow as well. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's always a classic. DeAndre Hopkins is a weapon now that's added to this mix, and Stephon Diggs is reduced, and now, you know, we'll see what happens. I believe Keon Coleman may be able to make it back. He missed the last couple games.
I believe they already ruled him out for this week.
Oh.
So he is not going to play on Sunday.
So I was told it was at least two games. Now it is a third game, so that's a little bit worse than they thought initially. That's a bad thing, but still, I mean, Josh Allen will find a way. This is a game that – is it Sunday night?
It's 3:25, I believe, but it's nationwide on CBS. There are no other games that CBS is airing. So it is it's national television, even though it is at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
You know, that's funny you say that, no other games, and it kind of reminds me why. There was a point in time where I hated the Eagles, man, because that's what they would do. You get the Eagles game and nothing else. Nothing else. And I'm like, dang, man, I want to watch Andre Reed. I want to watch Jerry Rice, you know. Want to watch Isaac Bruce. Like, you couldn't do it. Crazy. But, yeah.
Fox has two games at 3 o'clock, I think. Falcons, Broncos, and then 49ers, Seahawks, which should be a good one as well.
Okay.
49ers trying to kind of salvage their season after what's been a tough start for them. Obviously, a lot of injuries. The other game that I have my eyes on, Ravens-Steelers. I mean, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, they have been awesome this season, but it does feel like Mike Tomlin has kind of been Lamar's kryptonite at times throughout his career. And obviously Mike Tomlin's got the deal with the devil of he's always going to get a winning season, even when no one expects him to. And he started two quarterbacks. Both of them have found ways to win. I think that's going to be a fun one in Pittsburgh as well.
Yeah, that is going to be a fun one. Kyle Hamilton, I want to see what happens there because, look, if he's not in the mix, that pass defense, Jamar Chase went crazy on them. You know, he was going crazy before, but he went even crazier after Hamilton went down. That's a key part of it, but it's an opportunity. Well, we're not going to see it because it's a 12 o'clock game, but, man, Derrick Henry. He and Saquon Barkley. I love that because you got the devalue running back situation. And then on top of that, you got the whole you along with those devalues, you don't sign running backs to contracts. Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley are two guys that have helped their teams resurge. I love to see it.
It is kind of funny to look at the free agent running backs from this past year where the Titans there was no Hard Knocks watching them, but the feeling was that they kind of mutually agreed that that they're going to move on.
It was a split.
And then of course Joe Shane, the quote on Hard Knocks of "We're not paying Daniel Jones $40 million to hand it off to a $12 million running back."
Those two guys, $40 million to throw it to the other team. Okay.
And those two guys are the best two running backs in football this
year.
Best
two in football.
It's crazy to see that two teams. For better or for worse, in the moment, I think you could understand the decision from both teams, the Titans and Giants, to say, hey, we're not going to spend that money on a running back. But it definitely has not looked good through the first 10, 11 weeks of the season for the Titans and Giants watching those two guys in their new homes play the way that they have. I mean, Saquon last night.
Man.
He scored two touchdowns in 27 seconds of game time.
He got one of those jet packs. You hit the button, and all of a sudden the jet fuel comes out, and he propels. The way he, on that first touchdown.
Yeah.
Oh, man, he's fun to watch.
And,
man.
I mean, we talked about the backwards hurdle last week. Like Saquon and Derrick Henry are doing exactly what I think everyone knows they're both capable of, and they have obviously come into this season with a chip on their shoulder. Both over 1,000 yards, I believe, now, which, you know.
Yeah.
I don't believe Saquon Barkley was over 1,000 yards too often with the Giants, maybe twice in his 6 years there, three times?
I would say three times. I want to look it up. I'm curious because I'm curious what his season high is because I think he's going to eclipse.
I'd be sure he's probably going to eclipse it.
Did you see the story that Tim McMahon, that's my dog, man, my guy, Tim McMahon, did you see the story that he did?
I don't believe so.
Really good story. 1,312 yards. So he's got one, two, three.
He'll shatter that.
Three. This is his 4,000-yard season. But the whole – this streak that they went on. So Jordan Mailata, Landon Dickerson, and Lane Johnson went to Nick Sirianni's office. They said, hey, can we talk? Sat on the couch in there and said, listen, man, you got this good offensive line. Use it. And Sirianni was open enough to say, hey, you know what? We'll run. And now the Eagles are they run the ball more than anyone else. They're the number two rushing team in the league. Six-game winning streak. Pretty cool to see players come together and like, hey, let's do this. And the coach opened it up and it all happened. And you got your you know, A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, those guys are like, hey, we'll get ours when we get ours, but we want to win. And it's working.
It is funny to see in a league that everyone says it's a passing league, the Eagles and Ravens with quarterbacks who are elite runners of the football and the two best running backs in the league having a lot of success just running the football and being physical, and it's led to a lot of wins for those teams so far.
Very 182.6, 181.3. That's the Ravens and the Eagles leading the league. Almost 200 yards rushing.
Yeah. Titans, like, Derrick Henry's a little bit older. I'm not sure how, like, I will never doubt Derrick Henry, but, you know, Saquon Barkley, he could still have two or three more years of being in his prime moving forward. So Giants might live to regret that decision. They might already after what he did last night. That'll about wrap it up for us here on this Friday evening. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, TD, enjoy the game on Sunday. Titans-Vikings. I'm not really sure what to expect with this one. I think the Vikings, their defense is going to make it tough on Will Levis. I think the Titans' defense is going to have to force Sam Darnold into a couple of mistakes to keep this game close enough for the Titans to have a chance at the end.
Yeah, that's the key to it, forcing them to make some mistakes, the turnovers. Like I said, Leopard doesn't change his spots. We'll see.
Titans trying to get their third win of the season. We'll see if they can get it done. Noon kick over at Nissan Stadium on Sunday. For Teron Davenport, I'm Jake Lyman signing off here on this Friday evening. We'll be right back here in our usual time slot, 6 to 7 next Friday, previewing the Titans and Texans in the Titans' second divisional game of the season. Preds coming up next as they continue their road trip taking on the Calgary Flames. Pre-game coverage starts right after this here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.